Now, with New York's only local news talk morning radio program, here are John Gambling and Mayor Michael Bloomberg.
It is indeed a Friday, Bill Rock. You've got it right again. And we do have Mayor Michael Bloomberg here at 710 WOR News Talk Radio. Good morning.
With good weather. You know, I was just looking out your window at the Trinity Church graveyard.
It's lovely, isn't it?
Well, the people that are buried there, I don't know what they're thinking. But, you know, it's hard to talk. But it is a beautiful place. Part of the city. People picnic and they have lunch in there. I remember when I first came to work on Wall Street in 1966, a lot of people would go there, and we'd go occasionally and have a sandwich. But it really is a nice part. It's a beautiful church, and it's a nice part of American history.
There's some schools around here, and you see little kids. They bring them over here all the time.
Yeah, my earliest recollection of cemeteries, it was one block across the street, really, from where I grew up. And on Memorial Day, we would all go as a class and put flags on the graves of all of the American soldiers. And then they would have the parade would end in the cemetery, and they'd have some speeches. I was, you know, 10 years old. I don't remember what they talked about. Probably wasn't listening.
No, you weren't listening.
I think that's right. But it was, you know, it was a very patriotic time. And there's a big winged victory statue in this cemetery looking over all of the soldiers' graves. And I met the woman who was the model for it. She's in her, must be in her 80s. And she showed me her scrapbook where she was the model for A Small World. But I remember when they put that in. That was maybe I was 10 years old at the time or 8 years old.
I know you marched in a parade on Monday.
A couple of them. Yep. It's the most moving one was the Soldiers and Sailors Memorial rededication up on the west side. It is a monument to Civil War battles, the names of all of the southern cities or towns where they had these battles. What I learned about it was the whole custom of Memorial Day came when a group of dead Confederate soldiers, widows, and parents, I guess, were taking care of the graves at one of the battlefields, because they buried you right there. They didn't
transport you home. Right.
And they noticed that the Union soldiers' graves were all overgrown and nobody was paying any attention. And somebody had the idea that, you know, the Union soldiers, even though they were on the other side, they had parents and loved ones as well. And they started taking care of those graves as well.
I was not aware of that.
And then out of that came the custom of Memorial Day. And New York State, I think, was the first state to officially recognize it as a holiday. You know, it's very different than Armistice Day. Armistice Day, my mother tells a story. She was allowed to go further away from home. She lives in Jersey City to buy flags because everybody had to have their own flag for Armistice Day, which is in November of 1919.
November 11th, 1919,
is it? I don't know. Yeah. I've heard 1719, I guess. But, you know, I said to the crowd, you know, somebody asked me about protesters later on, and I wanted to press avail, and I didn't see the protesters there. But I said, you know, we are memorializing and honoring and saying thank you to people who are serving today, memorializing those that gave their lives and saying thank you to those that served and praying that those that are serving today come back. And I said, you know, they're fighting so that people can protest. And how dare you say people shouldn't protest? In some senses, it'd be a shame if we fought and died to give people a right to protest and they didn't stand up and express their views, no matter how abhorrent you and I might find any particular view. That's what America's all about, so why not do it?
All right, let me ask you on that thought. You'll lead me right to Mr. Sharpton tonight, claiming that he is going to slow things down here down around Union Square about 7 o'clock tonight and get some the bicycle groups to slow the traffic down.
Well, by 7 o'clock, hopefully everybody's gone home, so if he's going to do it...
That's as good a time as any.
That's as good a time as any. Okay. Thank you, Reverend. You know, look, I think that he has a perfect right to protest. I've always thought that for most things, civil disobedience is not appropriate. You can make your views known. And what we have to as a society do is make sure that those that don't want to protest aren't impacted adversely, although that's what protesters want to do. We want to make sure that people who have opposing views, no matter how much they disagree, or we may agree or disagree with them, have the right to do that. you know, there are such, sometimes there are abuses in society when maybe stronger protests are called for. For example, if you go back to when, you know, blacks really weren't allowed to vote, or there was real discrimination in the South, which is when I was growing up as a kid. And that's a very different thing than saying protesting because you don't like the way the police are doing their job, for example, which is, I assume,
which is what
I assume I
about,
heard, yeah. read about. Yeah. Actually, I'm looking at some statistics.
It has to do with the Sean Bell.
The police department really has done a very good job over the last half a dozen years with Kelly and all of the command and all of the officers that work there. The number of times they pull out their guns has gone down dramatically. The number of people they shoot has gone down dramatically. The stop and frisks are up, but if you look at them, they're in direct proportion to the reporters reporting by victims or witnesses of what the alleged perpetrator is like. So, I mean, by those kinds of measures, things like Sean Bell, it's a tragedy no matter what happened. You don't ever want to see that happen. But on you have to look at a police department of 35,000 people out in the streets protecting you and me, and they do a good job. But, you know, if Al wants to protest, let him protest. And I never found it as offensive, even when I don't. And a lot of times I don't agree with them, but that's what America's about.
All right.
Think of it both ways.
This week, up in Harlem on a street, 8 people shot. Story, really, a bad deal.
You know, we've had a lot of, fortunately, not that many murders. Murder rates just touch above
shootings,
what it was.
Shootings, though, are up, aren't they?
Sure, shootings have been up. Well, the last couple weeks I've looked, each year, these couple of weeks tend to be very high in terms of shootings and a little higher in murders. And
is there any explanation for that?
One explanation, and it's not the only thing. Maybe the spring comes out and people go out in the streets for the first time.
It's warm, the warm
there's
weather.
Too many guns. That's the biggest explanation. Too many kids have guns. I mean, the Mayor's Coalition Against Guns, we've got 350 mayors. I mean, this is the most serious thing that we are working on, and this country is crazy. I mean, go overseas, there's no guns. The murder rate, no matter how low we get it in New York City, we still be 10 times any other city in any city in Europe. It's just so dramatically different. You wonder what on earth Congress is thinking about. But there is there's some allegations that there were some basketball tournaments, believe it or not, where kids got so excited they would pull guns and shoot each other. They canceled the big ones. Now some of them have devolved into smaller basketball tournaments. You know, look, I don't want to see cops every place because hopefully you don't need them. But we are going to protect the people of this city no matter what. And, you know, I think hopefully this is just a little spike and that you have that in the numbers all the time. We were.
How about the culture of guns and what they say to young people?
A gun says to a young person, I assume you should talk to a psychiatrist who's an expert, but it says, I'm a big man.
Right.
You know, I'm bigger than you. I've got this gun. It equalizes you. It gives you power and that sort of thing. And the sad thing is guns kill people. Virginia Tech, 32 people were murdered one day. Enormous press coverage. You didn't stop talking about it, I'm sure. Everybody else.
Absolutely.
Newspapers, television, radio, magazine, cover stories and all that sort of thing. That was 32 people. We kill 34 people with illegal guns every day in this country. It's just spread across the country, and it doesn't make the newspapers. Maybe the local papers, the local section of, you know, so-and-so was murdered.
Right.
And I think the numbers are something like 4 kids who kill themselves or other kids by accident with parents' guns they find, and something like 44 odd suicides with mostly with handguns, although those may not all be illegal guns. But it's something like 80 people a day are killed in this country with handguns, and it's hard to get people to focus on it and say to Congress, stop this craziness.
Well, you hear it here. I talk about that all the time and take a lot of heat for it, as I know you do. Let me take a break right here. Do a little business, 17 minutes after 8 o'clock. 21 minutes after 8 o'clock, John and Mayor Michael Bloomberg here at News Talk Radio 710 WOR. Another crane collapse. Go ahead. Yeah.
And I see the crane collapse. Watching it right now.
This has turned into a big issue, obviously.
Should be. Should be. You know, we have inspectors out. I mean, the construction is dangerous, but this is just unacceptable and intolerable. What happened in this case, I have no idea. We're going to find out. It just happened.
You're right. Just minutes ago.
It's let's just pray there was nobody under it and nobody killed, but when something comes down.
I know the reaction of the building department had been after the last couple of crane collapses to make sure that there was an inspector on site anytime a crane was being moved, but those were eased up on, I understand.
Well,
it became impractical.
You know, no, when they're stepping the crane, right. That was when they do it, when they raise it or lower it. You know, the city, this enormous amount of construction, and can you have an inspector every place? And how many inspectors do you have when you're building a, 20-story building? Do you put one on every floor? And this is just unacceptable, and we've got to figure out what happened here. The construction industry, obviously, and real estate developers, they don't want you to shut it down. But the bottom line is, number one is public safety, and we're not going to tolerate any rate of accidents any higher than it absolutely has to be. There have always been arguments, well, big company, small company, some of the smaller companies are more dangerous, non-union, whatever. When we've looked at the numbers, it doesn't seem to be any trend, union or non-union, big or small. If you adjust for the size of the project and the number of projects, it looks pretty consistent.
Do you think crane collapse, or what do your experts tell you? They've been fairly rare in the past, and we've had a spate of them, though.
Well, the big one was down in the 50s on the east side, right. And in that case, they were using a nylon kind of belt to hold the brace that they used to attach the tower to the building,
mm-hmm.
And that broke. Whether that's normal approval, normally used, I think stopped that practice. But if it's been used by all these companies around the world,
for a long time,
you can't just stop everything and say, there are risks. Although the public walking by shouldn't be at risk. That's the first thing to make sure, and we'll see what happened here. I gather the vertical part of the crane stayed attached to the building the way it's supposed to. This looks like the top came off, and I have absolutely no idea whether the people under there or not. Let us pray there aren't, but it was probably a busy intersection, 1st and 91st Street.
Absolutely so. All right. Let's talk. There's so many things I want to get into here, but gasoline prices. We all cringe as we pull our cars to the pump. How is that affecting New York City? Have you not seen that yet?
No. It affects us. It's going to mean higher electricity rates for people that live here. It's higher gasoline prices for those that drive here, whether they're trucking companies or taxis or individuals with cars. It means more expenses for the city. We have to heat our buildings and generate electricity to run air conditioners and drive our garbage
trucks.
All of the stuff, and then it goes right through the economy. Yeah, which is why I keep saying, at dinner last night, somebody asked about the economy, and I talked a little bit about it to a group of people. And we don't have the same kind of problems they do in, let's say, southern Florida, Texas, the Sun Belt across the country. There they have a big housing problem in that there are a lot of second homes and a lot of homes built on spec that people can't sell and defaulting on mortgages, and that filters through the economy. Our problem here is that Wall Street is making a lot less money, and that generates less taxes for us, and then smaller bonuses and fewer employees, and that filters through fewer real estate transactions. We tax transactions less of that. But if you have to pay more for gasoline, you will use your vehicle less.
You see the story in the paper this morning that people say when it hits $5, I'm going to leave the car in the garage and take public transportation. My question is, will public transportation be available to the increased numbers of people?
Well, we don't have enough public transportation. I think the percentage of people who are going to leave their cars at home and start taking mass transit, the existing buses and subways will be more crowded. If ridership goes up 5%, there's 5% more people. On the other hand, the real problem with public transportation is it doesn't go every place and isn't a better alternative, because we want people to leave their cars at home. That's the only ways we're going to free ourselves from dependence on foreign oil. And it's fascinating. Tuesday night, Diane and I had dinner with the ambassador from one of the Emirates and his wife. And these countries in the Middle East are working as hard as they can to free themselves from dependency on oil coming out of the ground in their countries and from other places where they would someday, if they run out of oil or natural gas, have to buy it. They are making investments so that they will have other ways of generating energy and other ways of getting tax revenues.
Why don't we do that?
They're worried about dependency on foreign oil. And we aren't. Think about that. This is crazy. Because why? Because the politics of it and Congress, and then the people's, I've criticized some of the candidates before for suggesting that we should lower gasoline taxes. You can't have it both ways. Nobody wants to pay taxes, but as a public objective, do we want to reduce our dependency on foreign energy? Yes. And the only ways to do it is to make it less attractive and the alternatives more attractive. How do you make it less attractive? You raise taxes or you put fees on coming into the city. How do you make it more attractive?
I heard that somewhere.
You take the money and you improve mass transit. You make it better. I'm actually, there's a representative, Micah, who's coming in today. His pet project is a high-speed train from Washington to New York. We need something like this. I was in Singapore. They have a train that goes 250 miles an hour from the airport in. It takes 4 or 5 minutes. And I'll never forget, I had a cup of coffee they gave me on the train. They were showing us the train and all that. So it's the head of the railroad was there. And I put the coffee down. And we started out from a dead stop up to 250 miles an hour. And I looked. The coffee wasn't vibrating. It didn't slosh. It didn't even...
It was a maglev?
Yeah, a maglev. It goes up on magnetic field and then goes all the way.
But the point that you're
John,
making...
John, the solutions here are easy. What we should do...
The political will is what we don't have.
I gave a speech the other day, and I'd love to tell you I take full credit for the line that I used in it, but it was one of my speechwriters, who really is a very smart guy, and he, I think it was Bruce Corey that did it, he did really a great job. And the line was, it is a problem between what we don't know and what we do know, but the real problem in our society is between what we do know and what we don't do. So we know how to improve the environment. We know how to reduce the death rate from a variety of diseases. We know how to stop strangling our economy, but we don't do anything about it. What we do is we cater to the big ag businesses, 10% of all the farmers who get virtually all of the farm aid, not the poor little farmer who's struggling. That's the picture, but they never get anything. They really don't do very well in this. And we raise the price of corn ethanol by subsidizing
it,
and we keep sugar ethanol out. And I gave credit. Everybody said, oh, you're trying to pick a vice presidential candidate for McCain. No, I just said Charles Crist, who's the
Florida governor,
and Florida is the biggest sugar cane grower. Sugar cane generally isn't grown in this country. It's grown further south like Brazil. And he wanted to reduce tariffs on foreign sugar cane. Now, you say, why? Because the farmers in Florida wouldn't like it. It's good business because if you could get a lot of sugar cane in, we'd build factories to use sugar cane, and then the farmers in Florida would be
fine. Happy.
But that's the kind of thinking we need somebody to step up and,
And this is the kind of thing that has frustrated Americans. And I think Americans are getting frustrated to the point of, pulling their hair out because you're right. Nothing
ever
seems to get
done. Well, they may pull their hair out, but they don't change the voting. This isn't a democracy, folks. If you don't like your representative, you don't like what they do, then throw them out. And if you don't throw them out and make a change, then don't complain. I don't have a lot of sympathy for people that are tearing their hair out. The time to tear your hair out is in November. Get your friends and go out there and pick people. Yeah, you should demand from every one of the presidential candidates, every one of the candidates for the Senate, for the House, for the state legislatures, for the city legislatures across this country. Here are the problems. Tell me concretely, what are you going to do? And if you do it, how's it going to get paid for? And how do you build a consensus? And what can't we have? All these things are choices, and everybody's unwilling to say it's going to cost you something, and then you can't have something else if you do this.
We're going to get into that with the school budget that's been a part of the conversation and focus this past week. Let's take a break right here on the half hour. Mayor Michael Bloomberg.
It's not clear. One report said two people had died. Another report said they were seriously injured. But whatever it is, it's not good.
All right. I want to tell everybody, if you've got a question for Mayor Michael Bloomberg, your opportunity will be straight ahead. 800-321-0710 is our telephone number if you want to get online. You talk about making choices. That's one of the things that a mayor has to do constantly. Budget problems for next year when it comes to the school's chancellor Joe Klein before city council. Everybody's making a lot of noise.
Well, I mean, some of it's theatrics. If you step back and take a look, The facts are Joel Klein has done a spectacular job. I think he's got the second best job in the city after me, because the impact of what Joel Klein does, and Dennis Wolcott, the deputy mayor, works with him, will be felt for in decades. You help a kid when they're young, you impact their life for their whole life. We have raised, since I came into office, teacher salaries by 43%. We've increased the amount of money that the city spends, city tax dollars on education, by something like 79%. The state has been helpful, but they've given us only 55%. This year, I'd like to increase it more, but we're doing it. We are increasing the amount of money we're spending on schools this year, less than what I would have liked to have done, less than what we thought we could do. But the reality is we just don't have the money, and everybody's got a share in this. But we're still
increasing. But it's not a cut.
Well, that's government math. They say, I want a 10% raise, and you say, well, you're only getting 5% more. They say, you cut me 5%. I mean, this is craziness. You know, I'll give you a good example. We play that game a little bit. We said we're going to cut the budget this year by 5% we asked every agency to cut. But it's cut against what they were going to get. So, in fact, the bottom line is
5%.
It's not 5%. But we did, with something probably never done before in the history of this world, is we held the city budget constant. Forget about inflation, changing a dollar. That's the other thing they say. Well, if you don't give us a raise and inflation's up, our buying power is down. But in your household, if you say to your kid, you've got a dollar allowance and next year you're getting a dollar more, and the kid says, well, you know, Dad, inflation, you got to give me a dollar three.
As a dad,
kid,
I say, yeah.
It's a dollar. Yeah. You know, learn to live with it. But anyways, Klein's done a spectacular job. Graduation rates are up 20 points. Test scores are up 20 points. Crime is down.
State won't allow you to distribute
these cuts,
state, right?
Well, this is one of the things that happens. One of the things we found out was that poor schools with big pedagogical problems were getting underfunded by the city and the state. And the reason was the wealthy schools they knew how to get political power. They would help people get elected. So they always got funded. And it wasn't so blatant. They'd have programs that only were in those neighborhoods or only applied to the kinds of things that, you know, the kid wants to be a nuclear scientist. Well, you know, you'll get a different cohort than if you go to everybody in this city, sadly, because a lot of kids don't know about nuclear physics and they won't. But anyways, the state gives us some money this time, but instead of letting us spend it the way we think it should be spent, and Joel Klein is the expert on how to run a school system, not the legislature, and not the teachers union, and not groups of parents. He has a group of professional educators. They're the ones that should be running the school system. And for the first time, the state gave us money where we can only use it for certain schools. And the schools that they're trying to help really do have pedagogical problems. We do need to help them, but we need to help the best schools in this city as well. Not only do we want to help those kids who can't read and write, we want to help those kids who have a chance to be Rhodes Scholars and Nobel Prize winners down the road. And what we said is we evened out the amount of money all schools got per capita with city dollars over the last few years. Now, if the state comes in and tries to create a disparity between one kind of school and another, that's not fair. That doesn't make any sense from an educational policy. And we said, just let us reallocate the money equally across schools.
And what has Albany said other than
No. We have to help the schools we think are the most in need. All they're doing is creating different groups of schools and pitting parents one against the other. And we said, we're just not going to play that game. So then, of course, they say, oh, my goodness, we can't be accused of that. So they blame everybody else for it. They blame Joel Klein for it.
Is this going to be the status quo, though?
All we want to do is I don't know how it works out. All we want to do is treat all schools per capita fairly, equally. And then you do have some adjustments for special education, for English language learners, some places teachers, the buildings are different and they have to bus kids from one place to another, or, you know, they have extra expenses.
Every situation is different.
And we try to adjust for that. But fundamentally, we went from underfunding some schools by $2,000 or $3,000 per capita on a base of, let's say, $14,000, to making it all equal. And here comes the legislature, and they want to unequalize it, discriminate against some kids. And we've said, no, that's just wrong. It shouldn't be. This city.
Whose decision will it be to change it?
We can, in the end, we can turn down the money, I suppose. It's up to the legislature, two houses, and the governor. They got to pass bills, and unless, I mean, I suppose the governor could veto it and they could override his veto. So in some senses, it's just really the two houses of the legislature. But this is the same legislature that in the middle of the night, literally, you can't believe this, but they in the middle of the night slipped something into the budget bill without any hearings, any public disclosure, prohibiting the city from measuring whether teachers can teach when we have to grant them lifetime employment. You don't have lifetime employment?
No, we do not.
I don't have lifetime employment. Our teachers get lifetime employment, but we have a deal that it's up to after 3 years and then only after we look at whether or not they can teach. The state passes this bill in the middle of this law, in the middle of the budget where it has no business being, in the middle of the night so that nobody can make a fuss, and it literally says we can't measure whether teachers can teach. How do you measure whether teachers can teach? You look at the test scores. That's the only way as you tell if the kid's learning or they're not.
This morning I talked with Councilman Bill de Blasio from Brooklyn, and he was talking about these dollars and cents, and said that from his point of view, too much testing going on in the schools, too much money being spent on the testing, and it needs to be cut. I didn't take that position. You got to test kids.
Bill de Blasio was a nice enough guy, and he's smart, but sometimes he does some things that aren't really, says things that aren't really smart if you think about it. In your business, they test you, John. They call ratings.
Every day.
I mean, you know.
We speak.
And in the private sector, if you don't make money, the company doesn't make money, they go out of business. And if you don't do your job well, they replace you. I'm only in this crazy government world. They're so afraid of measuring anything because then they might be held responsible, accountable. And that's the last word they want. They don't know what they don't want to have be held accountable. And testing, the test, if you think about it, not only do you have to test to know whether the kid reads or writes, but the test they're talking about, John, is the test is whether the kid can read or not. Yes, you're right. We're teaching to the test. The test is, can the kid add, subtract, multiply, divide? Yes, we're teaching to the test, and that's what we should be doing. Think about what it says if you don't teach to the test. That is the craziest thing.
All right. To that point, also, the governor this week sent a memo out about gay marriages. Will that trickle down into the city?
No, the city already does all of those things. We recognize marriages from other states regardless of the orientation of the people. So from New York City, it's nothing that we haven't been doing for a long time. And I happen to agree with the governor on this. I just don't think it's the government's business, and I've always said that.
All right. On the crane story, some updated news here. We've got two people reportedly dead, a crane operator injured, another situation, and I know that it bothers you a whole lot. I mean, this is unacceptable, these sort of situations.
Yeah, I mean, it's very complex, and we will do an investigation. Every time there's a major thing, we always say we're going to do an investigation. The real issue is, do you learn something and then change things, or is it just this is a ways to stall by saying we're going to do an investigation? We're not going to stall. We did have something we did after the last one. I will be, rest assured, spending most of the rest of the day finding out why was that enough? And in some cases, it may just be that a piece of steel breaks and, you know, there's nothing you could have ever done about it, but that's not a good comfort. If somebody, how are you going to explain to somebody who's dead, their relatives, that, oh, you know, accidents happen? That's not a good answer.
No, absolutely. And obviously, when you're in a congested city like New York, you've got everybody pushed together. There's no space. There's no
room for
error.
Well, we have to build, and we have to, and you're always going to have this concentration, and it's big equipment, and, you know, we need to build high-rise buildings. But we have to find a ways to do it safely, and you can rest assured, I don't care how much the industry says, oh, you're slowing down our construction of your jobs, first comes safety, and then we can talk about the rest. And there's, I don't need any developer or union leader or anybody else telling me about the consequences of slowing things down. Nobody wants this economy to grow more than me. But we're not going to kill people.
All right. Something happened. It took a while, but it finally happened. The Senate, the state Senate, has given approval for your garbage plan.
The Senate has, and now we have to get the Assembly to go along. This will reduce an enormous number of pollution-belching trucks driving the streets of Manhattan if we can take the garbage and the recyclable stuff out by barge. Unfortunately, because there's a park, it's a great park, which incidentally my girlfriend's the chairman of the
commission. Saw a picture in the paper.
In the interest of full disclosure and to keep domestic peace, give her some credit. She's done a great job. A little bit prejudiced about that. But seriously, we need state approval to go across the park, a few feet, really just probably 50 feet, to get the garbage trucks to the pier. And there are three state assembly people from that district that are trying to hold it up. And this is a plan for the whole city. It all falls apart. Every borough is supposed, if this doesn't get done, every borough is supposed to do their own, take care of their own garbage. It's spreading the pain equally. It's fair. This is really not disrupting anybody. And the governor said he's supportive. The state senate just passed it. And now the assembly,
it's in Mr. Silver's district.
No, it's not his district. It's interesting. It's close to it. He's sort of the Lower East Side. This is on the West Side, much further north. Glick and a couple of Gottfried, and I think there's a third one. It's their districts. And Chris Quinn, the Speaker of the City Council, it's in her councilman district, and she's there. Not only is she for it, she said in all of these years she's gotten virtually no complaints from the public. So, and the alternative here is either another pier, which would cost us something like $400 or $500 million more to use, which maybe we have to do if we can't do this, or driving the trucks, which is polluting the air and killing all of us.
All right. Again, a reminder, if you've got questions for Mayor Michael Bloomberg, the number 1-800-321-0710. Be getting to that in just a little bit here. Manhattan Borough President Scott Stringer, tax breaks. He's concerned about tax breaks for fast food restaurants and gas stations and things of that nature. I know this is not something that you've encouraged. Why on the small side of life
I think
do these
generally
exist?
State subsidies. I have always thought that New York is an attractive market for companies to sell goods, and it's an attractive place to do business because of the great workforce we have, and that you'd be better off spending your tax dollars on improving the parks and cleaning the streets and making them safer and making it more attractive for people to live here, and then businesses will locate here rather than giving them subsidies. There are some of these programs that are state and maybe even the one or two city ones. The trouble is it's very hard to incent somebody. Supposing you make a deal with a company that Bear Stearns, for example, they probably did get back in those days long before I was in office, but they probably did get a deal. They'd increase employment in return for some tax breaks. Now, they're out of business fundamentally. How do you go? It's one thing to say a company's going to expand here versus expanding across the river in Jersey City. But if they don't expand at all and contract, there's just a little, they can only hold people's feet to the fire so much. So it's not quite as simple. Nobody wants to pay more taxes. We should only use tax breaks for companies when they have real alternatives. For example, Goldman Sachs, when they built their new building downtown, the state, against my arguments, I was not in favor of it, but the state gave them some extra benefits. In all fairness to the state, if you stand where Goldman's building the new building and just look directly across the river, they have a 70-odd story tower that they owned. It was virtually all empty at the time. They still have a whole top third of it's not full. They could literally have moved across the
river.
Cynic would say, oh, they won't move out of Manhattan. Well, there's a price at which maybe they would. I don't know. You don't want to find out. Or Merrill Lynch, they could have left. We kept them downtown. I mean, it's easy to go back and criticize afterwards. So I'm not sure exactly which one Scott's talking about. He's generally a thoughtful guy, and I may or may not agree with him when I listen to it.
All right, we're going to take a break, Mr. Mayor. Hang on. We'll get right back to you. Also, we'll get to you. Mayor Michael Bloomberg is here. Mr. Mayor, I saw you on your Palm Pilot getting the latest on this crane collapse.
I just talked to Deputy Mayor Skyla, who's there, acting Buildings Commissioner Bob Lamandry is on his way. Should be there in a couple of minutes. Police, fire, OEM, everybody's there. First thing is to get out anybody that's trapped, and then we'll figure out what on earth happened and what we can do to keep it from happening again.
All right, let's go to the telephones. Full bank of phones. We're going to start with Jack in Manhattan. Jack, real fast, what's your question for the mayor?
Good morning, Mr. Mayor. I was wondering if you ever thought of instituting butt tags, B-U-T-T, because it's a dangerous habit of people flicking their cigarettes, and one landed on my terrace the other day.
You're right. It's a great idea. I don't know how on earth we'd ever enforce it, but in some senses, we really have
it. The butt police.
Sure, but you have it because you're taxing cigarettes. Cigarettes can cost close to $9 a pack here, which is great because kids stop smoking, although adults would give up food before they'd give it. But I guess that's the only answer to Jack.
All right,
thanks,
Jack,
for the idea.
Good idea. Let's go to Bill in Brooklyn. You've got the mayor. Bill, go.
Hello, Mr. Mayor.
Hi.
I work at OTB. I'm one of the employees. The 1,500 people are starting to lose their jobs in 2 weeks. Not only is there 1,500 jobs involved, there's 40,000 around New York State. We've been lobbying already heavily to try and get this thing done. It's still stuck in committee. Is there anything positive you can tell us?
I can tell you this. We're going to close it if they don't come through. They think we're joking. The city is not going to subsidize OTB, and that's what's happened. We make, I don't know, $110 million, and they demand that we send $130 million to the racing industry in Albany. OTB was put in place to help the city and raise money for the city. We get nothing, and now we're going to go negative. And I've told them, no, we're not going to do this. Albany, I don't know if they think we're joking, but they keep saying, well, we'll do a one-year fix. No, fix the thing right now. And there's a process that we have to go to close it down. You have to send out repeated layoff notices. We've done that. You have to hire an appraiser or an auctioneer because we'll have to sell off the assets.
It seems to me that all the state has to do is equalize the money in, money out.
But they don't want to get rid of the money. They can't walk away from the money that we're giving them, and they don't want to take any money away from the racing industry. I couldn't agree more. This is very simple, and I feel very sorry for Bill in Brooklyn. There's no reason these 1,500 people should lose their jobs, and there's no reason we should give up this revenue source. I've never been a big believer in gambling, but I'd rather have a legalized gambling than illegalized.
Is there a lock-the-door date?
Yeah, it's the middle of June.
June is right around the corner.
We've been saying this for 3 years. Somebody said sell it. You can't sell it because nobody will buy this when the state legislature is going to take away all the
more
profits.
Exactly.
Right, sure.
So, I mean,
Bill, my thoughts are with you. Call Albany. Tell DC 37, your union, to call Albany. They think we're joking. We're not.
All right, let's go to Dave in the Bronx. Dave, you got the mayor's ear. Go.
Hello, Mr. Mayor.
Hi.
This may be an Albany question also, but I'm a police officer in New York City. I'm up for retirement soon.
Thank you for serving and all you do to keep us safe, but go ahead.
Thank you. I'm thinking of becoming a New York City school teacher, but if I do, I would not get a second pension from either.
Yeah, the city has a policy. You can't retire and take a second pension without a waiver. Sometimes there are. I've given probably only a handful of waivers in 6 years. Generally, you can't do it. The idea there, Dave, is simply that they don't want people to have 20 years and get out right away. If you did that, it'd be too easy for it. We'd have chaos. And, you know, you can argue both sides of it, but that's the way the
All right. We've got some time, I think, for at least one more. Let me go to Frank in Whitestone. Frank, you've got the mayor. Go.
Hi, Frank.
Good morning, Mr. Mayor. Mr. Mayor, I'm a field auditor for labor management, compliance of payroll contributions to pension and welfare funds. I've been auditing dozens and dozens of locals here.
What's the question?
My question is this, sir. There's an overwhelming non-union work going on than those who are in the union. And when I keep telling my CPA firms who represent these unions, they just tell me, forget about it. Just do a cursory order.
Frank, I have no idea the details. You'll have to talk to the union. I don't know whether it's right or wrong, and I just don't understand the details, and it's internal.
But there are both. I mean, there are union jobs in the
city.
Yeah,
but I don't think he's talking about non-union jobs in unions.
Oh, I see.
Or I don't know.
That's a little out of your purview, would be my guess.
Yeah.
All right.
Judy in Westchester?
Judy, you've got the mayor's ear. Go. Judy. Judy.
Yeah, you hit...
Hang on, my mistake. Wrong button. Oh. That's Judy.
There you
go ahead,
Judy. Hi.
Hi.
Real fast.
I'd like to know why you still give tax abatements to private property owners, and they're not... They're high-income people buying high-income properties.
Well, we don't generally do it. There may be some as-of-right things that have been built in. But fundamentally, Judy, we don't subsidize the investment. What we do is we invest it in better city, and then that's worth people to pay the money. But, we just don't. There are Yankee Stadium, Shea Stadium, $800 million each owner put in. When I came into office, the city was going to build them. We decided not to. They did it, and we did a little bit of infrastructure, but fundamentally that's
it. We got to run. Time is
I'm
up.
I'm going to go find out about the crane.
All right, you got to the crane. All right, we'll talk with you next Friday. Mayor Michael Bloomberg right here at...